Station Studio. Thanks to engineer Judy Feistel. I'll have the show online later today at stageandstudio.org and kbu.fm/stageandstudio, as well as on iTunes. And you can like us on facebook.com/stage, the letter and studio, where I think we also, on if you go to KBU's page, you can still see the Facebook live streaming that we just did. And you can tweet me also at stage, the letter and studio. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts.
KBU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 28th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from February 2nd through March 3rd. The Cascade Festival of African Films shows us Africa through the eyes of Africans, rather than a vision of Africa packaged for Western viewers. The films represent different countries and cultures and a range of lifestyles from pre-colonial to modern times, including both rural and urban settings. Films include 76 and The Footprints of Pan-Africanism and more at the Hollywood Theater, and The African Who Wanted to Fly, Foreign Bodies, Wulu, and many more at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, Room 104 at the PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 20th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from February 2nd through March 3rd. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hi, I'm Rick Mitchell, and I would like to invite you to check out my program, Jazz in the New Millennium, at kboo.fm. Each one-hour program focuses on a living jazz artist, putting their work in historical perspective from their earliest recordings to their most recent. The current season features such primetime players as Jason Moran, Diane Reeves, Christian McBride, Terrence Blanchard, and John Scofield. The weekly program is syndicated nationally by the African American Public Radio Consortium. It can be heard anytime on KBOO's website by going to the drop-down menu at kboo.fm, clicking on audio, then podcasts, and scrolling down to the Jazz in the New Millennium page. New shows are posted weekly. That's Jazz in the New Millennium with Rick Mitchell at kboo.fm.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Zemi Barr from Blue Sky Gallery. She's here to talk about Robert Frank, Books and Films, 1947 to 2017. That's on at Blue Sky through February 25th. Thanks for coming into KBOO, Zemi.
Yeah, thank you, Joseph. I'm happy to be here.
Robert Frank is in his 90s, and he apparently is known by every photographer. He's influential. He was friends with Jack Kerouac. I'm learning a lot about him, but this show is pretty extraordinary because there's so much work. It takes up your whole gallery, which is pretty rare, and there are contact sheets everywhere. There are multiple small images on large sheets of paper. It's really immersive. Just tell us a little bit about who he is, but also why this format.
Well, we're pretty pleased to be able to have this show because, as you said, Robert Frank is such a huge figure in the history of photography, especially, street photography, and has influenced not only the five founders of Blue Sky, but, you know, many photographers who come to our gallery every day. So this particular show is, it's pretty fantastic because it acknowledges the Americans as, you know, the seminal work that really changed photography for a lot of people. But it also moves beyond that to show the books and films that Robert Frank really cares about and that how his work has changed.
So if someone's never heard of him, what is The Americans?
So The Americans was a book that was published in 1958. It started as a trip that Robert Frank took around the United States in a car. He visited 48 states. It was made possible by a Guggenheim fellowship that he received in 1955. So, and this is also important to note that he was an outsider in the United States. He emigrated from Switzerland in 1947, came to New York, was working as a fashion and editorial photographer for magazines, but he wanted to do something different, and he was really interested to really see how Americans were living, because this was a foreign country to him, and he wanted to learn everything he could, and so he felt that how he could do that was through photographing, and he ended up getting that fellowship, and he went off in a car and traveled around, and the result, I think it's a little over about, 87 images, I might be wrong about that, that ended up in the book that Gerhard Steidel recently republished, along with many other books that are part of this exhibition.
He took, on his trip, he took 27,000 images, right? And yeah, it's, he used 83, so it's an incredible ratio. He's shooting film, and is it, do you know if he was shooting on auto, like fashion photography, or was this like each shot was deliberate? You know, he wasn't just holding the shutter down, he was shooting and framing each shot.
I mean, from what I can, you know, from what I know from the contact sheets we've seen, it seems, you know, like it was deliberate, but it's also great to see those contact sheets and see that he was trying to find the exact right shot. And sometimes it took a couple times. When we were looking at them together, there's one particular shot that begins the Americans. It's of two different windows with two people in them and an American flag that is covering the face of one person and the other is in the shadow. But when you look at the contact sheet from that particular roll, you can see that he was trying to get that shot, but there are about four that he was interested in until he came to this one, and he's, you know, put a red mark around it, like, yes, mm-hmm. this is it. And I think it's great to be able to see somebody who might be your hero photographer seeing his process and seeing that not everybody takes that shot the first time.
So he was shooting a parade in Hoboken, New Jersey,
yes,
in 1958. So you got kind of, you know, typical sash windows, the ones that go up and down, and someone's got a flag draped from their windowsill, and then somebody else, another window which looks similar, has a flag on a pole. So he's shooting both, and then he eventually goes with the one that's on a pole when the wind catches it, and it becomes horizontal, but it also cuts off the face of the neighbor, the person in the next window looking out, and the person with the flag as well, I think. So he's sort of waiting for a moment. And you get to see that in the contact sheets.
Yeah, and that's just really inspiring. And I think it really has touched a few people who have come to see the show. Our gallery manager, Amanda, also told me, you know, I think there maybe been a couple of people that have come away looking at the contact sheets with tears in their eyes. So I think it's a really important that people are getting to see this process of somebody they've admired so much.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you also see how bad some of the pictures are. They're like horrible. They're really badly framed. And, you know, there are the compositions can be a real mess because he's doing things that are happening. But when it clicks, he's got like your postcard image. One of them is a funeral, a black funeral, and it's three men, two are leaning against the car, and one man is in the foreground, he's sort of touching his own mouth, and they're all in scale, you know, that grows, and they're leaning, and the colors, the black and whites are pretty amazing. So you feel like you get to see classic photography that has been reproduced so many times, and then you get to see the raw material of, you know, how a working photographer behaves, which is pretty amazing.
Right. And, you know, with the rest of the show, which is, you know, the choice to print everything on newsprint to make this a more accessible show financially and to circumvent a more typical art market approach to having this exhibition, is also about, you know, people being able to see more of this artist's process. And, you know, he is more interested in making films.
So the exhibition takes up all your rooms, and it's printed on paper, right? Newsprint.
Yes.
So you have multiple images, but they're just flat on the same piece of paper. So how the idea is, it's a disposable exhibition. So what's going to happen to it at the end?
So as part of our contract with Steidl, who is the producer of this exhibition, is that we destroy everything at the end. And this is so that, you know, there's no monetary value put on these printed materials at the end, or, you know, there's no way to really have it circulated in the art market. So we are going to have a performance. We're calling it at the moment a destruction dance. There are going to be dancers Lou Yim, Mike Barber, Suba Ganesan, Pepper Pepper, Mishi Chavez, and Linda Austin. So that's on Sunday the 25th at 7:30.
Of February?
Of February, yes. So.
And they'll run through a sheet of paper like a football game or what?
You know, I'm not sure what they're all doing. They're all kind of do something different. There may be some collaboration between a couple of them. I think some of them are going to take certain parts of the exhibition. I think there's going to be some interaction with the films. Of course, the equipment will not be destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
Yeah, I think it'll be a really, you know, fun and maybe cathartic event.
Mm-hmm. Bring your fire extinguisher. So Frank did a series called, you call it, or he called it, London/Wales.
Mm.
And it's kind of a, you know, very obvious contrast. He goes to the city of London where there are bankers walking around in top hats in the fog, which is, it seems almost like it never happened, but it was real in the 50s. Top hats, bowler hats, Abercrombie overcoats. And then he goes to Wales where, you know, miners are wearing sort of rain jackets and they're covered in black soot and they're lining up for something. They got their little snap tins. What was he doing? You know, what did he go just for that? Or was that the outcome of a bigger visit? Do you know?
You know, I don't know. But, you know, what I have gotten out of it is, you know, and from most of the work of, you know, his earlier work is a real attention paid to social class and how that pans out. And he just is showing us what he's seeing and letting us make those connections.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the lifestyle of London at that time being made possible by, you know, this labor that may have felt removed, but he was putting it together in one place.
Yeah. As you go in, there's a, So he worked in books, right? He would shoot and then select his pictures and try and publish a book with some text?
Yes. For the most part, he was less interested in having text. You know, one of his first books was about his trip to Peru. This was before he did The Americans. I believe it was in the 40s. And he made a small book and sent it to his parents. So he just, I think, from what I understand, it just seems like he felt like a book was the best way to experience his work as a whole.
Yeah. So when you go in on the right in the main front room, the Peru is there, and you know the pictures are up on the wall. It's not in book form there. So you see all these kids with like little sort of bowler hats, you know, Peruvian type hats. These backpack things that seem to be made out of like rushes or something. And then, you know, sort of mountains, Machu Picchu type mountains with a fire going on. And the light is incredibly harsh and every like wrinkle is really sort of exaggerated or brought out. Was he known as a travel photographer at any point? Or because he's coming out of fashion, right? When he traveled, did he just try and do the opposite, or do you think he brought the same eye?
I think, though, you know, the work he made money doing was less of his interest aesthetically, and so what you're seeing with the Peru images and, you know, moving forward is, you know, more of the aesthetic he wanted to cultivate instead. So, you know, not wanting to glamorize what was around him and just shoot from the hip and, you know, see what came out.
Yeah, there's nothing glamorous about one of the pictures. It looks like a bunch of kids playing on like a slag heap, you know, a pile of rubble, and they've got this black dog like running across like a, it's this jet black sort of image in the front of the of the landscape. It's a pretty amazing picture. And he also cropped strangely, like one of the top hat guys in London is it's cropped like really vertically, you know, it's almost like a strip. Was he known for that, or did that happen? Was that done by Blue Sky?
Oh, no, definitely he's known for less traditional cropping and, you know, the way, I think that was what was so inspiring about his work for so many people when they started to see it with the Americans, most likely. But, you know, he wasn't as interested in making sure all the horizons were, you know, completely horizontal and in the right place and following all these, like, you know, rule of thirds and things like that. He was more interested in experimenting with what could be put in the frame and how the frame could be more dynamic, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Zemi Barr. She's the exhibitions manager at Blue Sky Gallery, and she's talking about Robert Frank, Books and Films, 1947 to 2017. That's on now through February 25th. Tell us a little bit more about the Americans, because I was surprised. He went on his own, right? In his car, and things would happen to him, like he was pulled over by some police and they were like, oh, there's this guy with a bunch of suitcases and cameras and he's got a funny accent and maybe he's a communist, you know. This was like the 50s, right?
Yeah, it was so probably like 55 56, yeah, so the height of the Cold War. Mm-hmm. He had a German sounding accent. There, in one of the reports, I think this one was in Arkansas, it was, he looked disheveled, in need of a bath.
That's right.
You know, yeah. They just were very skeptical of this person traveling around with lots of cameras. Like, what was he taking photographs of? So he was detained, I think, for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. In that case.
And you have the sheriff's letter.
Yes.
Which is really well written and formal. But, you know, it's amazing how he's got that letter, you know, so many years later.
Yeah, and it's printed really large in the exhibition, so you can read it. It's also in the catalog, the newsprint catalog that you can purchase as part of the exhibition, which it's actually a really great resource for all of that sort of archival material because, you know, it's something that... a lot of the things in the newspaper I didn't know before, so.
So the catalog is called Süddeutsche Zeitung, which that's the main Swiss German language newspaper, right?
I believe so, yeah.
I think. But anyway, the catalog looks like a newspaper, and so you can buy it for $5, read it, and then throw it away, or, you know, pull out some of the pictures and put them on your wall. So the whole exhibition, again, is... to be printed in wherever it takes place and then destroyed.
Yeah, and I mean, even there's one of the first articles in the catalog newspaper encourages people who have the newspaper, yeah, please put this on your walls. You know, this is meant to be an exhibition for you to enjoy Robert Frank's work at home because that's what he wants. He doesn't want everything to be stuck in archives somewhere and... not viewed.
Mm-hmm. So he's in his 90s, lives with his wife in Canada?
Yes.
In rural Canada?
Yeah, he splits his time between Canada and New York City.
And he wanted his other work to be shown, you know, not just the Americans. He wants all this other stuff. You know, he's got photo journals, he's got Polaroids, he's got all, you know, the things we associate with Warhol. He did them too. And so they all get printed on newspaper and just pinned on the walls. Like it's very low tech. The books are there, right? You've got them hanging by wires. Mm-hmm. So people can just pick them up, flip through them. You know, they're not coffee table books. They're like, grab this book and really look at it.
Yeah, and I mean, that was an aesthetic choice that Frank really wanted to be sure was kept with all of his books. He and Gerhard Steidl have collaborated on all of the books that they've published, even down to what paper and what binding, you know, just how the feel of each book is going to be. He wants it to be very intimate, but also very accessible, because especially his newer work, which he has primarily done with color and black and white Polaroids. It's mostly bringing his personal life into focus alongside sometimes some of his past work. But actually, some of the visual diaries that we have, which are in a small room in the middle of the gallery, that's one of my favorite parts of the exhibition because it feels so personal. It has a quiet poetry to it that I really appreciate.
So these visual diaries are, you know, pictures of sort of a hedge or a mountain with a cloud. These are in color. Or there's one partida, which I think, does that mean exit? It's a sign anyway, yeah. And he's taken pictures of a sign. There's some graffiti, "We can't all win." There's a cactus, just, I don't know if it's a real cactus or a model of a cactus dangling from a crane, or it's just this cactus image. So he's going around shooting images for himself, right? These are diary type works.
Yeah, and I mean, it reminds me a lot of what we might think of, you know, what Instagram was meant to be for. He's doing an analog version that has a bit, you know, it has a bit more presence in that these are physical objects that he's made. But yeah, they're pieces of his life that are brought together in these discrete little books.
Are you saying Instagram may have strayed from its original intent?
I just think, you know, everything kind of evolves. And I think what used to be a place for you to just say, this is what I'm doing today, has become also a place for advertising. You know, there's always... that always comes in at some point. But it doesn't mean you can't still do those things with Instagram.
Right. How do the photo purists view Instagram now? Do you spend less time on it?
No, I love Instagram. I guess I'm obviously a visual person, so that's one way I like to keep track of the people in my life who are not nearby. I like to see what they're seeing. So, but I tend to really whittle down my feed so that I'm seeing what I want to see.
Right. So if you see people who are promoting something, you lose interest.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't always work, or like sometimes I'll be like, oh, that does look interesting. So I keep an open mind, but yeah.
So he has this room, seven stories. Is that right? Or is that a different part of the exhibit?
It's in the back room with the films. It's seven books that he that are all, I believe, color Polaroids. You know, family and friends, both of his homes, a trip to China. So yeah, again, it's a continuation in a way, or yeah, it is like the visual diaries.
Mm-hmm. These are Polaroids. These are people, actually, and but some of them are weird because there's one that's like a Polaroid of three flies,
mm-hmm.
and one says father, mother, daughter. Is that written on it in hand?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another one of three flies, saying looking for desire.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's
what does that mean?
What is he up to? Because does he shoot Polaroids and then sort them out and make a book out of them? Or does he shoot with the intent of making a narrative?
You know, I'm not sure about, you know, like his exact process in that way. I mean, I know that he writes on them later. I think, you know, based on his other books, which bring in material from the past and present. And, you know, I think he's always thinking about how memory functions. And so it may not necessarily be a chronological process, or, you know, we're constantly adding to our memory, losing things, putting things back in. So that's how I interpret the process, but I don't know.
There's another series called Household Inventory Record, and it's him in his house. It's just like him looking out the window, and then there's a similar shot of his wife. But he's got this chopping block in his living room. It's like a big log with an axe on it.
So
he's Canadian.
Well, I mean, yeah, he's been living in Canada for quite a while. The house that he and his wife, the artist June Leaf, they live, it's fairly rustic. It looks at the sea. It's a little bit outside of Halifax. It's kind of a brutal landscape, but beautiful. And it shows up in those Polaroids, you know, the harsh beauty of that place, and also the space it provides, I think, for thinking and making. I know that June Leaf, you know, that's where her artist studio is. You know, he often photographs her making her work, which is fascinating. But yeah, what I love about that particular book is it's meant to look like, it's printed in a way to look like a little ledger. So it's black leather. It's, you know, rectangular, vertical, and all the images are very small. And so you just feel like it's this intimate time with Robert Frank in his daily life.
He also is really interested in making movies. I'd seen his one about the Rolling Stones when I was in college.
Oh, that's rare. So
I didn't realize it was him until yesterday. And I can't say the name on the radio. But you've got a row of mini projectors pointing against the far wall, the white wall, and you're showing videos. What are they?
There are some of the films, short films, that are a little more rare. They're a lot of kind of showing his process moving from photography into film. So one of my favorites that we have up is called Moving Pictures, and that really shows him, you know, literally moving still images in front of the camera, thinking about how do I go from these still images to making, putting things in motion. But it's also about mortality and death. And in some ways, photography is always about that if you, you know, like if you think about it from the Roland Barthes point of view. But yeah, so he's talking about the death of the people around him, his parents, his two children, you know, his friends. So it's a really beautiful short film. It's about 27 minutes long and well worth standing in front of it.
There's a graffiti on the wall, you know, saying so tired of so many goodbyes or something like that.
Yes, yeah. And that's, I think, what that film is really about. I mean, I think a lot of his work is about, you know, saying goodbye, and how do you do that, you know, through, and maybe film as a way to keep people more alive.
So when you get rid of the show, I mean, he really doesn't care. I mean, he's not about preserving this work. His own work is printed and it's very delicate, and people don't even want to show it because of insurance. And so this is like the rough and ready version. And what you're going to do then? Tell us again on the last day.
Yeah, so we're going to have, let's see, how many dancers? Six performers are going to come on February 25th. That's a Sunday at 7:30. They're going to all be doing performances that end in the destruction of the work. So beyond that, it's pretty open-ended. So you'll have to come and see what happens. I think it's going to be pretty great.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Zemi Barr. She was talking about Robert Frank, Books and Films, 1947 to 2017. That runs through February 25th. Thanks for coming into KBOO, Zemi.
Oh, thank you very much. I had a great time.
Great.